Today, and also maybe a hint of what we have on tap for you this week. Well, let me get to that. On Wednesday, I'll be down at Norwich University. It is the annual Colby Military Writers Symposium. It's really one of my favorite shows every year. We get to meet some of the most interesting people down at the nation's largest private military college. That'll be coming your way on the program on Wednesday. Coming up today, later this hour, we talk with Congressman Peter Welch. He's just back on a big overseas trip. I want to find out more about what he learned in places like Tunisia, Germany, and France. So he'll join us coming up at about 9:40 this morning. You can join us throughout the program at the usual phone numbers, 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. We begin this morning with really an incredible story. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Middlebury pediatrician Jack Mayer, who is the author of Life in a Jar, the Irina Sendler Project. And as I mentioned, Jack is over in Middlebury. He's going to be coming into the Valley here for a talk at the end of the month, which we will also discuss in the course of the program. And again, you can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Jack, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, Mark. Thank you for inviting me.
Let's begin with some basics here, because it is opening day of baseball season, so maybe we can get first, second, and third base here kind of identified. Who was Irina Sendler?
Irina Sendler was a Polish Catholic social worker who, during World War II, organized a rescue network then that was responsible for rescuing 2,500 Jewish children from the Warsaw Ghetto. Incredibly, nobody knew about her after the war. There was this great silence and sort of denial about the trauma and the Holocaust in Poland, and really throughout the world, silence about the war. The trauma. So Irina Sendler's story was forgotten after the war.
Until who are the Kansas teens?
Yeah, well, here's the compelling, the other compelling part of this story is that 60 years after the war, these three teenagers from Kansas, three girls, two 14-year-olds and a 16-year-old, discovered a very brief reference to Irina Sendler and what she had done. In the course of doing a history project for National History Day, and they wrote this short play, a 10-minute play, that they called Life in a Jar, about her exploits. The reason they called it Life in a Jar was that Irina Sendler kept lists of every child they rescued. They had their Jewish name, their Polish names that were on their forged documents for hiding them. And they kept them in jars, and Irina was insistent upon this because she said, I want these children to know that they were Jewish and to know their Jewish names after the war. So they called the play Life in a Jar, and it just took off. This was in the year 2000 when they did this National History Day project. 15 years later, they are still performing this play.
Wow.
It's now 30 minutes long, 35 minutes long. They have performed it over 350 times in the United States, in Canada, and most significantly in Poland. And in Poland now, Irina Sendler is a national hero. And they, because of this, in no small part because of this project and these Kansas girls, they have really helped to crack open the silence and create a dialogue about the war and about Polish-Jewish relations. What's so compelling about this is that these are typical American teenagers, these three girls, and they come from a high school in Kansas, Southeast Kansas, Uniontown High School, that has 120 students. It's one of the lowest income school districts in Kansas. It's a school with no diversity. There's never been a person of color in this school. There's never been a Jew in this school. At the time they were doing this, there was never even a Catholic in this school.
Wow. All right, so let's lay down third base here. So what's your connection? Why is a pediatrician in Middlebury, Vermont? How did you get interested in this story?
Well, it's sort of an odd story. I'm a German Jew. I was born after the war. My parents narrowly escaped the Holocaust. Some of our family did not and were killed in Auschwitz. So I'm a pediatrician in Middlebury. I'm a member of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, and I get their calendar in 2001, which I get every year. And in the calendar is a picture of Irena Sendler, and this, and I just flipped through it very quickly, and it just, I read the paragraph. It said that she had rescued 2,500 Jewish children from the Warsaw Ghetto, and I said, huh? I never heard of her. Everybody knows Oskar Schindler.
Right.
Rescued 1,100 Jews from a German concentration camp in Poland. Why don't I know Irena Sendler? So I kept this calendar. I put it in a file I keep in my desk that's labeled interesting stuff. And it sat there for 3 years. And then in February of 2004, I came into my office one night to see a child, and on my desk is clearly meant for me to read is a copy of the Ladies' Home Journal, which I don't keep in my waiting room. And it's open to an article about these three teenagers in Kansas who discovered the history and the story of this forgotten Holocaust hero, Irena Sendler.
All
right. I called the teacher, Norm Kennard, who is really a remarkable part of this story as well, a remarkable educator, and to talk with him about this, about these two stories. And I'm a closet writer. I've been a writer for 40 years, and it's just something I've always done. I've always enjoyed writing. I talked to him about it. He said, you know, it's serendipitous you should call, because we're looking for someone to write the two stories, Irena's story of her, what she did during the war, and this complimentary story of these Kansas teenagers and how they rescued the rescuer, is the term they use. So I went out to, I was really intrigued and really compelled by how these two stories fit together. I went out to Kansas in November of 2004 and to Uniontown, Kansas, met the girls and Norm and their families and some of the other people in the community. And I just fell in love with the girls, their story, with the power of these two stories and how they work together. Decided to write the book.
Wow. So who left the Ladies' Home Journal magazine in your office there?
You know, I for the longest time I didn't know, and then I finally found out maybe a year and a half ago. I had a pediatrician who worked in my office one day a week just to help me out. Her sister was coming to visit, and her sister knew that that she worked for a Jewish pediatrician. So she said, oh, maybe he'd be interested in this story. And that was it. I mean, she just put it there for me to read, but didn't say anything about it. So I, for a long, you know, all the time I was working on this book, I had no idea who put this there.
Wow, kind of makes you believe in fate, doesn't it, Jack?
It does, and I have felt a finger in my back more than once doing this project.
Before we wrap up here, we're going to loop back to what's in this interesting file of yours. I want to get back to that, but let's focus. We'll stay on topic here for just another moment or two. So you say that the discovery and the, I guess, publicity surrounding Irena Sendler created a dialogue, you said, back in Poland. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, I think that's really what is so significant about this project is that... you know, in Poland, after the war, under communism, the communist government in Poland was a very anti-Semitic government. There were people who were partisans during the war, who were resistors during the war, who rescued Jews during the war, were considered to be outlaws. They were hounded by the government. They were interrogated. They were imprisoned. Some of them were executed. So it was an atmosphere in Poland of where you didn't admit to having been part of the resistance. You didn't admit to being a rescuer of Jews. after the communist government fell, which was 1989, there still was this silence about the Holocaust, and in part because of the immense trauma that Poland suffered during the war. I mean, I think arguably Poland was the most traumatized of the countries under Nazi occupation. So there was this silence, this hesitancy about coming to terms with the Holocaust. And then all of a sudden, these three innocent girls from the United States come over to Poland and start performing this play that talks about the Holocaust, that talks about that, that is a, you know, that that talks about the victims, that, but that also talks about this hero, and it really causes them to start reflecting on this painful history. And the consequence has been that now there is a dedicated curriculum to teaching the Holocaust in Poland. Every child from the age of 9 to 18 has to go through this curriculum. They have to visit one of the camps, mm-hmm. in death camps in Poland. There's now a museum of the history of Polish Jews in Warsaw that was built by the government, which is a gorgeous museum that's dedicated to 1,000 years of Jewish history in Poland. There are now commemorations and markers of the Warsaw Ghetto in Warsaw, and there's a real dialogue and a feeling of reconciliation between Poles and Jews that is due to these kids. So it really is, and this is one of the things that was so compelling for me to write this book, was that it's the power of one person to change the world, of one teenager to right. change the world. These kids, they started as students of history. They became agents of history. They changed the world, just the way Irina Sendler also changed the world.
Mm-hmm. And obviously you have a real interest in helping kids.
Being a pediatrician and being Jewish and having my own family history involved here, it certainly were strong and compelling draws for me to engage with this forgotten piece of history.
Jack Mayer is the author of Life in a Jar, the Irina Sendler Project. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Tell us more of her story. I mean, it's really a fascinating story. It's a fascinating story personally, but it's also, maybe you could talk more about how she was able to do this.
Well, in Poland, in the occupied countries in Europe, there were different penalties for being a rescuer of Jews, or even helping Jews, even feeding Jews. And they were the harshest in Poland. In Poland, if you were caught helping Jews or feeding Jews, the penalty was that you would be executed and your entire family would be executed. So the calculus of rescue was really different in Poland than it was in most of the other occupied countries. yet Irina grew up with this ethic that she got from her father. Her father told her two things over and over again. One was that if you see someone drowning, you must rescue them, even if you can't swim. The other thing he said was that there are only two kinds of people in this world, good or bad, and regardless of race, regardless of color, regardless of creed. So when she saw what was happening to the Jews in the ghetto, she felt that she could not be a bystander and not do something. So as a social worker, she was really compelled to do something, and she formed this network of 10 social workers. Incidentally, this is a story about women and rescue, which is sort of an unusual story of resistance during World War II. Most are stories of men and fighting. Almost everyone in this rescue network was a woman. Each of these 10 social workers had a group of liaisons who helped them. These were young women, mostly young women without children, who were either who were Jewish and inside the ghetto, or Catholic and on the Aryan side of the wall. She formed this amazing network, and some of them were arrested and some of them were executed to smuggle children out of the ghetto. They escaped through the sewers. They escaped through. Irina would sometimes carry a sedated child in a gunny sack under her arms through the wall. There were morgue wagons that sedated children would be placed in. There were holes in the wall. Some babies were put in packages, like postal packages, and put under seats in a tram. There was a courthouse through which children could be gotten through underground tunnels. I mean, the stories, it reads like a thriller.
Yeah,
I think that of the chances that they took. And Irina herself would go into the ghetto two or three times a day, She was this very small woman. She was 4 feet 11 inches tall and just had nerves of steel to do this.
Well, and you know, it was, they had this access that was, you know, that was extremely helpful because they were social workers. I mean, that was sort of a key to the whole thing.
Exactly. And Irina also herself posed as an infection control nurse. She had forged documents. You know, the whole thing, if you made up this story, someone would say this could not be true.
Right. They'd say Liam Neeson isn't female and he's not available for the movie.
Exactly.
So she at one point gets caught. Talk about that. What happened?
Yeah, she was finally arrested in October of 1943. She's taken to Pawiak Prison, which is one of the most notorious prisons in Poland at the time. She was tortured, interrogated, and was about to be executed. And very few people got out of Pawiak Prison alive. It was, as I said, the most notorious prison in Poland. Irina Sendler escapes from Pawiak Prison. I'm not going to tell you how. So no mm-hmm. spoiler alert. I urge people to get the book and read the book because it's really a great story of how she gets out of Pawiak Prison. You know, when these three Kansas girls start the project of Life in a Jar Project,
right.
they think Irina's dead.
Right, right.
She, you know, they say, oh, well, she must be 90 years old. If she were alive, she'd be 90. And they knew she was arrested. And so they're looking through cemetery records for where she was buried. And then they find out that she's still alive and living in Warsaw. And some philanthropic organizations in Kansas City raise money to send the girls to Warsaw to meet Irina. And that's another whole touching part of this story and compelling part of the story is the relationship that develops between Irina and the girls from Kansas, which is this beautiful, she becomes like their grandmother. And each of these girls carries a burden, a weight, a painful issue with their own mothers. And part of the arc of this story is how Irina is really helping these girls. And really, in a sense, the last three children that Irina Sendler rescued were the girls from Kansas.
Wow.
It's a beautiful story.
What are they doing now?
Well, Megan is now the program director for the Life in a Jar Foundation. So she now works with this foundation, which is still in Kansas, same place in Kansas, in Fort Scott, works with teenagers around the world. Every state in the United States and countries around the world to do projects about unsung heroes in history that reflect the legacy of Irina Sendler of tolerance and respect for all people. Liz has just gotten her second master's degree. She teaches Holocaust history to middle school students, and Sabrina is an elementary school teacher. She just had her third baby. Third baby is about 2 years old now.
Mm-hmm. Go back, Irina Sendler, talk about her marriage, her second marriage, and her third marriage.
Well, you know, Irina was a very real person, and every real person is a flawed person as well. And for, you know, this amazing, heroic woman, really had a difficult personal life, which she talked about and acknowledged, and it was a great sadness for her that her first marriage and her second marriage ended in divorce, failed. was very sad about not giving enough attention to her own children because she was so busy saving other children. Because even mm-hmm. after the war, she continued as a dedicated advocate for children, for handicapped children, for orphans. So she was, you know, she was a very, very real person, and she suffered greatly, even to the end of her life, from the feeling. And I had the opportunity to interview her. I met her before she passed in 2008. She said, "I didn't do enough. I could have, you know, we didn't rescue enough children. For every child we rescued, 100 went to their deaths at Treblinka." So she was a very humble person. You couldn't call her a hero. She would reject that label. She said, you know, the heroes were the parents who gave up their children to us. the heroes were the mothers and fathers and grandparents. She said the babies were the heroes of their mothers' hearts, is how she put it.
So what did you say to her when she said that she hadn't done enough, Jack? What was your response to that?
Well, Irina Sendler was this very strong, forceful woman. She, when I visited with her, this was 2005. I went with the Kansas kids to Poland on their third visit to where they put the play on, she would just stop you in your tracks and say, "No, I was not the hero. No, it was my network. It was the liaisons. It was the young Jewish women in the ghetto. It was the young Polish women, Catholic women on the other side. They were the ones that are the true heroes." She said, my mission is to make sure that the world does not forget these people who carried out this rescue, that the world not ever allow this kind of tragedy, this atrocity to happen again. So it was interesting when the girls found Irina's story. She was living in obscurity in Warsaw. She was living with her daughter-in-law. Nobody knew who she was, and her great sadness was that she would go to her grave and that nobody would remember the network of rescuers that were involved here. So, and she was, her son had just died very early. He was 49 years old. He died of a heart attack. She was depressed. She was, everybody expected her to die. She had turned 90 then.
And she had lost one or two kids.
Yeah, she had lost another child. She had a premature child. Her second child was born very prematurely and died. That's right, after the war. This was in 1999, her son died, and then 2000, the girls found her. And people who knew her said it was like putting a wilted flower in water. She just blossomed. And the last 8 years of her life, she was able to tell her story, to have this interaction with these kids from Kansas, and to know that the memory of the Warsaw Ghetto would be preserved, and that the story of the heroes of this network would be stored. And you know, it's interesting now, this is Passover. This week is Passover week. On Passover, Jews are instructed to tell the story of the Exodus from Egypt and to tell it as if we were slaves ourselves coming out of Egypt. And, you know, I think another aspect of this Irina Sendler project is that it's these two stories. It's this contemporary story of these Kansas teenagers who are telling this historical story of the Holocaust. And, I think this generation of kids, another generation removed from the Holocaust, has to be able to learn this story in a powerful way that will stay with them. And I think telling these two stories together, the contemporary and the historical, conveys this history. And I want kids to think that this story has to be remembered as if their lives depend upon it, as if their community depends on it. So it matters how this story is told.
Jack Mayer is the author of Life in a Jar, the Irina Sendler Project. He's a pediatrician in Middlebury. If you have any comments or questions, join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255.
Mark, I also wanted to just mention about I'm going to be in Waitsfield on April 29th. To talk about the book and to have a reception and a book signing. It's going to be at the it's sponsored by the Vermont Humanities Council and by a group called Everyone's Child. This is a group that's started by Ruth Young in 1998. A very powerful example, another example of how one person can make a difference. This is this group works with schools in Kenya to establish schools, to feed orphans, to develop water sources where there are none. And it works in conjunction with kids in Duxbury at the Crossett Brook Middle School with the Children's Literacy Foundation. The kids at the Crossett Brook School actually have they're sort of pen pals with students in Kenya. Everyone's Child works to eradicate poverty, to build schools. They're now they're asking for donations at, when I'm giving the talk in Waitsfield, to complete two new classrooms in a Kenyan school. Another example of how one person can make a huge difference in the world.
Well, you know, that theme that you've been talking quite a bit about this morning is one that interests me greatly. Have you believed that your whole life, that you're really one person can make a difference? Because I know a lot of people don't feel that way.
I believe that with all my heart. And, my hope and my prayer with having people read this book and become involved with this book, or become involved with a group like Everyone's Child, is that they really have this strong sense that anything you do that is any deed you do that is reparative in the world it goes to a big distance to save the world. That it's and that you don't have to do everything. There's this this saying that it is not for us to complete the task, but neither are we free to desist from it. So that, and this is what I try and convey to high school students when I give talks at schools, is that you can't fix the whole mess that this world is in, but it's a damaged world, and every act of repair, every act of goodness that you do is going towards repairing the world. That's what's critical, is that you do something. The only mistake you can make is to do nothing, is to be a silent bystander. And I hope that high school kids will be inspired by these three girls from Kansas to see how even a small act, a little play, can totally change the world. And that every act of kindness, of goodness, of decency is reparative to a damaged world.
Let's go to Bethel. Davis, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning to your guest. I'm curious about the interesting file. Sort of elements do those items that are in your file on your desk of interesting stuff, what do those things sort of have in common? What interests you? I mean, what stands out from interest? Because I fully agree with both you and Mark on one person can make a huge difference and stuff, and I just wondered about the nature of the other stuff in your interesting stuff file, please.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, it's a completely random collection of... This catches my interest. I mean, I have articles in there about babies born with teeth, natal teeth. I have articles in there about the controversies of having children and babies sleep on their stomach or on their back, about the benefits of breastfeeding. It's random stuff. I don't think that there's no theme. And you know, I have now four interesting stuff filed. So there's no particular theme of what goes in there. It's the stuff that doesn't have any place else to go.
Well, I'm hearing kids in that theme. I'm sorry, but you know that seemed to be the
yeah. It's all pediatrics. I mean that's sort of been the you know that's what I've been involved with and interested in since seventh grade. So.
When these students, which inevitably one of them asks you in the high school class, okay, so Jack, that's great, one person can make a difference, but how do I figure out what the one thing is I'm supposed to do? What do you tell them?
Yeah, well, I tell them that every single day they are faced with moral choices, that it can be something as small as saying a kind word to someone. It can be speaking up about bullying. It can be doing something about neglect or about abuse. It's the small acts of goodness that, taken in concert, become then life-changing and world-changing. And I tell them, you know, when you do an act of kindness and goodness, it is then increasing the likelihood that you're going to do it again. And that you are then also a role model for the people around you, for the other students around you, for your family. So that you have to, I also talk about being a bystander, because it's a complicated issue. To some extent, we are all bystanders, because we, you know, I mean, if you think of all of the horrible things happening in the world, and you know, in every country where there's, you know, in Nigeria, in Darfur, in Somalia, in Rwanda, Bosnia,
yep.
Our history is studded with it. We can't fix all of those things, but we can't do nothing. We have to be concerned and do something. And in our daily lives, in our communities, we have the opportunity to be what I call upstanders, to be doing something.
When did you, just out of curiosity, this idea that figuring out that small acts of kindness can actually make a difference, when did you figure that out in your life, seriously?
Boy, that's a good question. I've never been asked that before, Mark. You know, I think the best way I can respond to that is to just think in terms of what is it about people that makes some people have empathy and others not? Is empathy something that can be taught, that can be learned? I think I received that from my parents. I think I received that from my upbringing. I think people who have studied rescuers have. And characteristics of rescuers have found that it's really the kind of upbringing they have that and the kind of role models they have in their lives that determine whether they're going to emulate that behavior or not. And you know, I think I grew up with an ethic that you must be concerned about what happens to other people, that that you need to be generous. You need to be an activist. When I was younger and growing up, I was active in and vocal about the civil rights movement, about the the anti-Vietnam War movement. So it was my parents that fostered that, and I think coming out of Nazi Germany is part of. The legacy that they left me is that you cannot allow this to happen again.
Mm-hmm. Hallmark made a movie about Irina Sendler. So is Hollywood ever going to, make a big, this sounds like it could be just an easy one, really.
Yeah, it would be great. So do you have Steven Spielberg on speed dial?
man. And I lost David Lynch's number, too, so sorry. Remind our listeners where you're going to be on the 29th and at what time.
So on the 29th, it'll be in Waitsfield. It's at the Big Picture Theater and Cafe in Waitsfield. At 4:30, I'll be hosting an author's reception. There'll be food, and I'll be doing a book signing. And that people need to pre-register for that. And then at 6 o'clock, I'll be doing the program and... The reception fee is $20. The general admission for the program is free. So that's Wednesday, April 29th. And it is sponsored by Everyone's Child, as well as the Vermont Humanities Council. I hope people will come and tell other people about it. And I'd be very happy to sign and, personalize books there and talk with people.
How do people register, Jack?
The best way is through to contact Ruth Young at it's everyoneschildren@gmail.com. So it's all one word, everyoneschildren@gmail.com.
All right.
There's a website, www.everyoneschild.net, that you can find information about.
Last question. These jars that you talked about where Irina kept the names of the kids, did you see any of those when you went and visited her?
Well, after the war, when she and her co-conspirator dug them up finally, for the last time. She gave them to Adolf Berman, who was the head of the Polish Jewish Committee, and he was also a survivor of the Warsaw Ghetto. He brought them to Israel, and the feeling was that most of the relatives of these children would probably be in Israel. All of their parents were murdered in Treblinka, but the hope was that they would at least be able to identify some relatives, and that some of these children would in fact, the Kansas folks have identified about 650 of these children. They have the copies of the names from the list, and about 650 have been identified. Some have been reunited with, or had been after the war reunited. There are thousands of people in Poland who were rescued during the war who don't know it to this day, because of the silence after.
Wow, isn't that wild?
It's incredible. I've become acquainted and good friends with the chief rabbi of Poland from my two visits there. And he estimates that there are between 20 and 40,000 Poles who are Jewish and don't know it because they were rescued during the war by someone.
Wow. Jack, thank you for your time this morning. Good luck in your efforts.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Jack Mayer is the author of Life in a Jar, the Irina Sendler Project, talking about the incredible Holocaust hero Irina Sendler. Coming up next, we'll talk with Congressman Peter Welch. We're going to find out about his trip to Tunisia and Ukraine back after this.
My name is Sharon, and this is why you need to put your cell phones down.